Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, the Virtual University of Pakistan, and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture of Financial Management. In the previous four or five lectures, we have been talking about capital structure theory and practical problem solving. The theoretical aspects of capital structure have been covered in chapters 13 and 14 in our textbook entitled Financial Management Theory and Practice by Brigham and Gepensky. If you have difficulty understanding some of the concepts, then kindly go over these chapters. The final result that capital structure analysis gave to us was an ideal or optimum or best value for the capital structure of the company. In other words, what it gave to us was an answer in terms of what the total debt to capitalization ratio, in other words, what percentage of the total value or capitalization of the firm should be debt, and what that ratio should be. And as we mentioned, we looked at different theories and ideal cases which allow us to calculate the weighted average cost of capital and the changes in the weighted average cost of capital as you change the level of debt in the firm. And we mentioned that at the optimal or best capital structure, we minimize the weighted average cost of capital. Now, practically speaking, oftentimes, it's not possible to calculate one exact value for that ideal debt ratio, and instead we have a range of different debt ratios which are very close to each other in terms of the minimizing the weighted average cost of capital for the company as a whole. We are now going to move into an area that is connected to capital structure, and that is the area of dividend policy. The area of dividend policy is a very important one for financial management because this is the area which helps financial managers decide how much of the company's profits and earnings should be distributed to the shareholders in the form of dividend. And you will recall from the beginning of this course when we spoke about stocks, and then later when we spoke about the stock pricing models, including the Gordon's formula, that we have been talking about the dividends which constitute the cash flows that are coming in for the shareholders. So now we're going to talk in detail about how a firm decides how much of the earnings and the cash flows should be distributed to their shareholders in the form of dividends. So the first thing to understand is that firms have cash inflows and cash outflows taking place continuously over their life. We spoke about this when we studied capital budgeting. Just to refresh your memory, what are things that constitute cash outflows or expenditures in the form of cash payments? Well, one example would be when a firm decides to purchase machinery that requires spending of cash. Another example would be when a firm decides to buy an office space or a factory space or building or land. In other words, when firms acquire assets, that constitutes a cash outflow. Similarly, when a firm decides to invest its money in new projects that yield positive NPV, then that too is an investment. And these investments, whether these are investments in assets, fixed assets, current assets, or investments in new projects and businesses, even when a firm buys another business, that too is an investment. These are all cash outflows. And these are the subject of capital budgeting, which we studied at the beginning of this course. Now let's take a look at cash outflows that are related to the investors of the firm. Who has invested in the firm? Well, basically, two categories of investors have invested. One of them are known as debt holders, and the other group are known as the shareholders. The debt holders are the banks and the bond holders, and the shareholders are those investors who own shares or equity in the business. And both of these investors have invested their money in the firm, and in return for this investment, they receive certain cash flows from the firm. And we mentioned when we were studying bonds and bond pricing that bondholders receive coupon interest. That is a cash flow. And for the firm, that is a cash outflow. This is cash that is paid to the bank in the form of interest. Similarly, the firm or the company also pays cash in the form of dividends to the shareholders. Now, dividends, as we mentioned before when we were studying stock pricing, are not fixed, particularly for common equity. For preferred equity, the dividends can be fixed. But it's important to keep in mind that interest for debt holders and dividends for stockholders both constitute cash outflows for the firm. And we are going to focus our attention now on the dividends that are paid to the shareholders, the equity owners of the company. Now, in dividend policy, we're going to answer some important questions which I'd like to raise to you right now. The first question that we will answer is, how much dividend should be paid out? Now, we can talk about dividend either in terms of the total rupee value that is paid out during the year in the form of dividends, and that appears in the financial statements of a company, or we can talk about dividend per share. That's the same thing, because to calculate the dividend per share, we simply divide the total dividend by the number of shares outstanding. How do we decide how much dividend to pay out? Well, recall that we spoke about dividend yield and capital gains yield when we were studying stock pricing. We studied the Gordon's formula. And just to refresh your memory, in the Gordon's formula, the required rate of return for equity, which is approximately equal to the cost of equity, is equal to the dividend yield plus the capital gains yield. The dividends yield is equal to the future dividend divided by the present price, and the capital gains yield is measured by means of the dividends growth rate, G. And the fundamental decision that a firm needs to make is how much of the total return to the shareholder should be given in the form of dividends and how much should be given in the form of capital gains. Please also remember that dividend yield basically takes into account the regular dividend payments, whereas the capital gains yield is concerned with how much money a shareholder can make by buying and selling the share of the company. And this is a result of the share price increasing. If the share price increases, then the shareholders can make money by selling the shares. So that is what constitutes the capital gains part. And remember that if a firm is paying out too much in the form of dividends, then it cannot pay or yield as much in the form of capital gains. So there is a trade-off. If the firm is giving too much in the form of capital gains by having high retained earnings, then the dividend yield will be low. And if the dividend yield is high, then the capital gains yield will be low. So this is a matter of a balancing and a juggling act that is part of good business judgment in financial policy. And shortly we will talk about some factors that can help us decide how much dividend should be paid out. The other questions that dividend policy will help us to answer is how often we should pay out the dividend, or how regularly. Should the dividend be paid out once a year, or should it be paid out once in 6 months, or every quarter, or every month? How often? And generally speaking, dividend is paid out at least once a year, possibly twice a year, and very few companies, mature, well-reputed, large companies with brand names to protect, oftentimes give dividend every quarter. Finally, the very important question that we need to answer is, what will be the impact of dividend policy on the value of the firm and on the share price? And that is the question that I will begin by answering for you. And what we need to do is take a look at a few different theories that have been proposed to answer this question. To sabse pehla sawal jo hum address karenge wo ye hai ki dividend policy ka share price aur company ki value pe kya asar hota hai. Iska jawab dene ke liye hamare paas teen theories hain. The Miller-Modigliani irrelevance theory basically is an extension of the Miller-Modigliani capital structuring theory. You will recall when we were studying capital structure that Miller and Modigliani said that the total value of a firm, which is equal to the total value of debt plus the total value of equity, is entirely independent of the capital structure of the firm. In other words, they said it does not matter how much debt the company has, because that has no bearing on the total value of the company. Similarly, for dividend policy, Miller and Modigliani said that the dividend payout, or how much a firm decides to pay to its shareholders in the form of dividends, has absolutely no bearing on the total value of the firm or on the stock price. They came up with this interesting conclusion, making some very, very large assumptions. And these assumptions are the same as the ones that they made earlier on, basically that it is an ideal world where there are no taxes, no brokerage fees and transaction costs, where everybody has access to the same amount of information. In other words, every investor knows exactly the same amount of information about any company in the market. So these are very, very large assumptions that have been made. And finally, the most important assumption as far as dividend policy is concerned, they mentioned that investors don't care whether they are getting return in the form of dividend yield or in the form of capital gains yield. Practically speaking, in the real world, these assumptions are not true. And therefore, we have to rely on some other theories in order to answer the question of what the best dividend payout ratio should be. One of the practical theories that have been proposed is known as the bird in the hand theory. And this has been proposed by Professors Gordon and Lintner. And basically, it is what the name suggests. You might be familiar with the expression that a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. And what this means is that whatever money you can get right now is worth more to you than money that you expect to get tomorrow or next year or next week. And this is the same concept that we spoke about earlier when we were discussing the time value of money. So what this theory is saying is that firms should give as high a dividend payout as possible. Why? Because that maximizes the shareholder value. In other words, what they said was that dividend income is seen by the shareholders as immediate, regular, and risk-free income. Whereas capital gains income is uncertain. In other words, shareholders can't be sure if the price of the share is going to go up or down. So they cannot be sure if they will make any capital gains. Because the only way to make capital gains is for you to buy the share at a low price and to sell it at a higher price. However, dividend income is income that they receive immediately. So it has time value, and dividend income is a bird in the hand, whereas capital gains income are those two birds in the bush that you can't be sure about. Another theory that has been proposed to help us answer whether firms should offer a high or a low dividend payout is known as the tax preference theory. Again, as the name suggests, what this theory says is that the marginal tax on capital gains is lower than the marginal tax on dividends. Generally speaking, in most countries around the world, the capital gains tax is between 20 to 30%. In some countries, there is no capital gains tax at all. However, the tax on dividends is generally much higher, and it is about 30 to 40% of the total dividend value. So what they said was that rational investors, intelligent investors, would prefer to receive income in the form of capital gains, and therefore it is in the shareholders' best interest that the firm should give out as little in the form of dividend payouts as possible. And you might be a little confused here, because the conclusion that we have just come to in the tax preference theory is that firms should give out the minimum possible dividends. Whereas the previous theory, known as the bird in the hand theory, said that firms should give out the maximum possible dividend payout. So which theory is right? Well, when we apply theories to the real world, we do a juggling act, and we have to keep in mind all factors and variables and theories that have been proposed. So we need to take into account both of these factors, both the time value of dividend income as well as the tax advantage of capital gains income. And to help us answer these problems, let's take a look at other factors that influence the dividends payout ratio. One very important factor that we need to consider is signaling. Now, we spoke about signals a little earlier, and we mentioned that you will recall when we were talking about capital structure theory that when a firm decides to raise capital in the form of debt, they are giving a positive signal to the investors in the market because they're giving the impression that their earnings are healthy, therefore they can afford to pay interest regularly, and they're also giving the signal that they have some good positive NPV projects in mind, which is why they are raising debt capital and not raising equity capital, because that would have meant that they have to share their profits with more shareholders. So what the signaling theory is telling us is that whenever a firm decides to change its dividend payout, it is giving a signal to the market. What signal is it giving? Well, if a firm decides to increase the dividend payout from what it was giving before, then the signal it is giving to the market is a positive one. In other words, if a firm was giving 1 rupee per share dividend last year, and this year it decided to give 2 rupees per share as dividend, then it is giving a positive signal about its own financial health. Because the signal it is giving is that the firm's earnings have improved and its cash flows have improved, possibly because of operational improvements or maybe because of financial improvements. So we have to remember that whenever a firm decides to increase or decrease its dividend payout, it is indirectly giving a very, very strong signal to the market and to the investors. And this signal has real consequences because it affects the trading of that share, it affects the supply and demand of that share in the market, and therefore it affects the share price. One very important other effect is known as the clientele effect. This effect basically mentions and tells us that when a firm changes its dividend payout, it changes the kind of shareholders it has. And the reason for this is that the theory tells us that shareholders buy the shares of those companies whose dividend policy they like. In other words, shareholders who depend on regular fixed income will buy the share of those companies who give regular, steady dividends. Whereas those investors who do not need regular income, but instead look for large capital gains income in the long term, will prefer to buy the shares of those companies that offer large capital gains income. And companies that offer large capital gains are known as growth companies. However, the case for those companies that pay regular fixed dividends is that they are called income companies, or their stocks are called income stocks. And examples of income stocks would be the stocks of large multinational companies and FMCGs. FMCG stands for fast-moving consumer goods. Companies that make consumer goods like toothpaste and soaps and shampoos and so on, and tea. These companies whose shares are listed on the stock exchanges often give regular and fixed dividends, and they would be classified as income stocks. Now, another factor that we need to keep in mind in dividend policy is known as agency costs. And we spoke briefly about agency costs earlier on. Basically, just to refresh your memory, these are costs that the shareholders or the owners of a company have to incur in order to monitor and control the expenses and the spending of the management. In large companies, it becomes very difficult for the owners to limit the expenses of the management. In America, there are many companies where the managers and the chief executives simply leave the company in the middle of the day for 2 or 3 hours. They have lunch, they go to the country club, and they play golf. Now, who is paying for this? The shareholders are paying for this. So, in order to keep a check on the management, the shareholders have to incur agency costs. Now, these costs can take the form of a high dividend payout. Why is that? Because if the shareholders and the board of directors decide that a firm should give out high dividends, then the company will not have as much internal financing available for future investments. So the company will have to look outside of themselves to external sources like banks and outside shareholders in order to raise capital. And when they have to look outside for external financing, for external capital, when they have to approach the external capital markets and the financial markets in order to raise money, it comes at a price. So when a firm has to approach outside investors in the external capital markets for money, then they expose themselves to scrutiny and checks. And this is beneficial for the shareholders because it maintains a check on the expenses of the management, because outside investors require a thorough check of the financial statements, including the profit and loss statement and the expenditure accounts. Now, one more very important factor that influences dividend policy is related to debt contracts or loan contracts or bonds. Practically speaking, the bond contracts and the loan agreements restrict how much dividend the company can pay to the shareholders. Remember that the bondholders and the debt holders have first claim on the assets in the event that the company becomes insolvent or goes bankrupt. Therefore, they need to protect the cash flows. And in loan agreements, the company is restricted in terms of how much dividend they can pay to the shareholders. And in order to pay dividends, they have to meet certain financial ratios. And generally, those financial ratios are the ones we've spoken about, including the TIE ratio, the times interest earned, and the current ratio, and so on. Another aspect of this issue is the impairment of capital rule. Now, the impairment of capital rule basically states that a company cannot give out more dividend than the amount of retained earnings that it shows on the balance sheet. So this is a legal requirement that companies should and have to follow. Finally, the third aspect of the financials of a company that have a bearing on the dividend policy is that cash dividends have to be paid out from cash. And you will recall that I mentioned early on in this course that only cash is cash. Retained earnings, profits are not cash. Therefore, if the company does not have enough cash balance in the bank or in the company, then it cannot pay out more cash dividends than that. What will it do if it does not have enough cash to pay the dividends? Well, one way is for the company to sell assets. By selling assets such as machinery or property, it can raise money which it can then use to pay the shareholders in the form of dividends. And there are various other ways of raising cash, including borrowing money from the bank. So companies can borrow money from the bank in order to pay dividends to the shareholders. This is not always a very advisable strategy. So the objective in financial management is that dividends should be paid out regularly and that dividend payout should steadily grow with time. In other words, a firm should pay out steadily growing dividends. Now, this is not that easy, and it is a challenge because keep in mind that the capital expenditure of a firm varies with time. Sometimes a firm has the opportunity to invest in good projects, and other times it doesn't. Sometimes the machinery breaks down and the firm has to invest in buying a new machine, and at other times that's not the case. So the capital expenditures of a company fluctuate with time and they keep changing. Sometimes they increase, sometimes they decrease. Similarly, the sales and the earnings of a firm are also not fixed. They fluctuate with time. The cash flows of a firm are not fixed. So it's not easy to fix the dividend payout either. Why? Because after all, dividends are paid out from whatever cash is received. And if the cash received or incoming cash is fluctuating, then how can you guarantee a steady dividend payout? This is the challenge in financial management and in dividend policy. And there are ways to do this because what the company has to do is to make certain forecasts about anticipated cash inflows and outflows and to have a fair idea of how much equity is required in the future and then to calculate how much earnings they expect to save after they have taken into account the capital expenditures, and whatever is left over is money that can be used to pay dividends. And to be on the safe side, companies offer a very, very small and limited amount of fixed dividend, and then they try to make sure that there is a slow and steady increase in the dividend payout with time, and that they never reduce the amount of dividend that is paid. It's important not to reduce the dividend payout because it gives a negative signal to the market. Investors think that the company is headed down and that its earnings are headed down. So financial managers will always try to avoid reducing the dividend unless they can at the same time compensate the shareholders in some other way. Now, a steady and growing dividend policy is good for the investors also. Why? Because keep in mind that many of the investors have to meet day-to-day regular expenses. Apartment rent, house rent, school fees, tuitions, food expenses, and so on. And this requires a regular and steady source of income. So the investors benefit from a steady and growing dividend policy because they can depend on the dividend to meet their regular expenses. Not only that, keep in mind that there is a macroeconomic enemy, which is inflation. And inflation requires that the investors keep up with the depreciation of money, because inflation erodes wealth and it erodes money. So they need to receive an increasing amount of dividend in order to cover for inflation. So investors hope that the dividends growth rate of a company is higher than the inflation growth rate in that country. Finally, a steady and stable dividend policy is also good for the company, because by giving out only a small amount of dividend, companies are able to save earnings for the future in case they have certain unexpected expenditures, capital expenditures or losses. They can use the earning reserves in order to fill the gap. Of course, by following a steadily growing dividend policy, the firms are giving the right signal to the market. And what are these signals? These signals are, number one, that our company is financially stable and healthy, and number two, that our company is not as risky, and that its earnings are steady, and that they are not as uncertain as other companies which are not following the policy of stable and growing dividends. So, practically speaking then, there is one model that has been proposed which is considered to be the best model for pursuing the optimal dividend policy. And this is known as the residual dividend model. And in the residual dividend model, the objective is to make certain forecasts about the future earnings and capital expenditure, and to determine the optimal capital structure, and then from that to calculate what the optimal dividend payout should be based on the long-term vision. Now, this long-term does not have to be 50 or 40 or 30 years. It can be as short as 5 years. Keep in mind that the first two things that need to be done, which is the calculating the anticipated capital expenditure and the optimal capital structure, are things that we've already studied in the earlier parts of this course. Now, the first step in the residual dividend model is to make a 5-year forecast of the expected future capital expenditure, earnings and cash flows. This will give the financial manager an estimate of the free cash flows or the net cash flows that the company has available to allocate and to invest freely. Keep in mind that most of the financial managers follow the policy of conservatism, in which they prefer to underestimate the free cash flows in order to take into account any possible mishaps or expenditures that might arise. The second step in the residual dividend model is to estimate the optimal capital structure. And as I mentioned earlier, it's not always possible to calculate one value for the best debt ratio for the company. Why? Because the best capital structure changes with time as the operations of the company and the finances of the company change with time, and as the company grows or shrinks, so too the best capital structure changes with time. So Generally speaking, firms prefer to determine a range of values within which the debt ratio should be set. So, for example, a particular firm might have an optimal capital structure range of between 20 to 40% debt. Now, once the managers have determined the forecasted capital expenditures and the optimal capital structure range, they can then estimate the future retained earnings, and their first priority is to use these retained earnings that have been internally generated by the company as a source for equity. In other words, keep in mind that the firm has two options for raising equity. We spoke about this when we were studying share pricing. A company can either raise equity from outsiders by selling its stock in the open market, or the firm can raise equity from the retained earnings that it has been saving historically. So the net income from the previous years that has been saved in the form of retained earnings that is shown on the balance sheet can be converted into equity. And firms will always prefer to use retained earnings as equity. Why? Because it's very cheap to raise equity in this way. Remember that when firms have to issue stock in the open market and to print share certificates and market them in the stock exchange and pay brokerage fees and commissions, all of that costs money. So trying to raise new equity from the capital market is expensive, but using your own internal retained earnings and converting that into equity is much cheaper. The final and fourth step in the residual dividends model is for the financial manager to estimate the residual long-term dividends that can be paid out. What do we mean by this? Well, after the manager has estimated the cash inflows from the future earnings and he has estimated the cash outflows in the form of capital expenditure, and he has estimated what the expected retained earnings will be, then whatever earnings are left over are known as the residual earnings. And the manager can pay out dividends from these leftover or residual earnings. He can then easily calculate the dividend per share by dividing the total dividends by the number of shares outstanding, and therefore he can come up with short-term targets for dividend payout. So he will be able to determine, let's say, whether or not the company can afford to pay 1 rupee per share on a par value of 10 rupee every quarter or every 6 months or every year. So I would like to stop here and end the new material for this particular lecture, and let us review some of the important theoretical and practical concepts that we have talked about in this lecture. We introduced the subject of dividend policy, and we mentioned that dividend policy helps us to answer what the best amount of dividend that a company should pay to its shareholders should be. In order to calculate this dividend payout ratio, which is equal to the dividends divided by the net income, we talked about a few different theories. One of them was the Miller-Modigliani indifference theory, which was for the ideal situation. And then we spoke about two practical theories. One of them was the bird in the hand theory, and the second one was the tax preference theory. We also mentioned that these two theories contradict each other in terms of whether the company should pay a high dividend payout or a low dividend payout. For the bird in the hand theory, the recommendation is for the firm to give a high dividend payout. For the tax preference theory, the ideal situation is for the firm to give a low dividend payout. In order to address this problem, we spoke about some other factors that affect dividend policy. What are some of these other factors that affect dividend policy? Well, we spoke about the importance of signals to the market. Whenever a firm changes its dividend payout, it is giving a signal to the market. When it increases dividend, it is giving a positive signal to the market. And there are other factors like clientele effect and agency costs, and there are legal restrictions placed by bondholders and loan agreements that limit the amount of dividend a company can pay to its shareholders. We then spoke about the most important effect of all, and that was dividend stability. The primary objective of financial managers is to try to ensure a stable and growing dividend. This is in the better interest of the shareholders, who expect a regular source of income, as well as in the better interest of the company, which is giving the right signals to the market about its financial strength and low risk. We then ended this lecture talking about the most important practical model in dividend policy, and that is known as the residual dividend model. And in this model, we begin by estimating the future capital expenditure requirements and the future earnings of the company. We estimate the target optimal capital structure range, and then we are in a position to calculate what the leftover earnings of the company will be over the next 5 years, and from that we can make the dividend payouts, and we can calculate what the dividends per share should be on a short-term basis after taking the long-term into consideration. I will stop here. Thank you for your kind attention and patience. On behalf of the Virtual University of Pakistan, the Ministry of Science and Technology, and Mubashir Humayun, I thank you. Khuda Hafiz, or Assalamu Alaikum.